This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manicero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, today we've got a really interesting show, and we've got a returning guest. Our guest is Jeff Greenberg. Now, you may recognize that name because he was on a very popular podcast that we had. In fact, it was the third podcast, 003, and you could look that up. And, of course, we'll have links in our show notes for everything we talk about today, too. But it was called Growing a Real Estate Empire While Working Full-Time. And this is a hot area because a lot of our guests, a lot of our listeners have are working full time, and they're maybe coming close to retirement, and they're concerned about building something up so when they retire they'll have the funds that they need to get going. And Jeff lived it. He in fact, up until recently, he was a W-2 employee, and I got to meet him, I think, his first week or first couple of days of freedom, and he's wearing jeans and a t-shirt, far cry from, his corporate life. So I'm going to first give you a little background on Jeff, and then I'll let Jeff go ahead and update you guys on where he's at today. So Jeff is an MBA. He has 40 years experience in management, staff supervision, development and training. He has proposed, implemented, and supervised multi-million-dollar budgets for government agencies, as well as private and public organizations. Since 2007, Jeff has been investing in multifamily assets in emerging markets. Jeff focuses on acquisitions, investor relationships, contract negotiations, business systems development, business management, and asset management. He is currently focusing on value-add multifamily and student housing properties. And he also runs two REI clubs, real estate investor clubs, and mentors investors in multifamily and student housing acquisitions and asset management. Well, Jeff, welcome to a man who has earned his freedom here. Welcome to the I wouldn't call it semi-retired. I would just call it just this new transition in your life. How's it feel not having to put on a tie every day?
Well, it feels fantastic. But actually, I didn't wear a tie, but that's all right. But still, freedom is still good anyway, without the alarm clock.
You can actually sleep in a little bit, that's good.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, Jeff, you have such a great background. We're purposely zeroing in on a subject that I think is a real key one for many of the people that are listening. There are people that have already invested in real estate. Maybe they have a single family home somewhere they're getting rental income from. Some may have some small multis, but there are a lot that are interested in taking that leap from the single family, small multi area into apartments and into the commercial realm. And this was a transition that you made that it really stuck with me when we had our interview about a very unique way you approach that. This is one of the challenges many of us face, and I'm in that same boat right now too, is overcoming that barrier to entry. Apartment buildings, generally, you're going to be dealing now, it's a commercial venture. They don't look at just the you know, the market, the housing market, and putting the proper down payment. They're looking at things like what's your business plan and what's your approach, what's your experience. And experience, I really emphasize here with quotes, experience is important in getting the financing and getting investors and moving to that next level. But you came in from a different standpoint. I thought maybe you could share that in some detail. I know there's other areas that you're doing and you're involved with that also can help people to overcome that barrier to entry. So why don't you just kind of give us a little bit of your background and how you got started in multifamily, and especially that little trick that you had there that got you in the door.
Well, I started out, as a lot of people did back when I was starting, where we didn't have a lot of the resources that I feel that we have now, as far as, you know, Bigger Pockets and your podcast and some of the other podcasts out there. And I did go to a lot of seminars, and I spent a lot of money at those seminars. And I tell people that I don't know that has to be the route that people need to go. There's many other ways to do it. And what we were talking about before is one of the things that helped me get in the door. And essentially, I came in as a passive investor, and I know a lot of people do prior to investing in or to actually sponsoring a deal. They go into other people's deals. And that's what I did. I went into a fairly large deal. It was 700 units, and I think he was raising about $20 million. I came in as a very tiny investor, and I was rather surprised that when I went to get my loan on a 20 unit property that we bought, which was our first property, that the loan officer was very impressed with the fact that both of us, both myself and my partner, were both invested in a $20 million, 700 unit investment. And even though we were passive investors, we had no control over the investment, but it was an in, and he was very impressed and really fought to get us in the deal and to get us the terms that we needed and all of that. But it surprisingly did help. The other thing is I had hoped that I would learn from being a passive investor, and I did learn. I did learn a lot from it. I'm afraid not all of it was positive. I did learn that there's better ways to treat investors. And so I've learned that lesson very well from the investor side. So there's a lot of lessons to be learned from being a passive investor for those people that want to go on and do their own deals.
That's so interesting to me, Jeff, because you weren't part of the management team of this project, right? I mean, you were just strictly a very passive investor, right?
Exactly. I was just a passive investor.
And yet the banker that looked at that, you know, saw that as some viable experience, you know, to leverage on that loan, which I think is really interesting. Now, would you mind, you know, putting it on the spot here, but, you know, kind of sharing the amount that you actually invested in that project?
As far as how much we invested in the project?
Yeah, you personally.
Personally, we had no money in that deal. We actually, I mean, typically the way that we've done it is we put money up front, But typically, since it was a syndicated deal, essentially we got all of our upfront funds back and essentially had no money in that deal.
So what were your upfront deal? What did it take to get into that deal?
Well, there was the earnest money. This was a $1 million purchase. So the earnest money was probably $10,000. And then, of course, you know, our travel expenses, all of our inspections that we did. Of course, there was some closing costs on the loan, which actually this lender so much wanted us in there that the closing costs were negligible. I mean, we didn't have any loan origination fees. We had hardly anything.
Wow, that's amazing. That's awesome.
I think it came out. I figured it out one day. I think our closing costs came to like 0.75%.
Wow. And again, I'm kind of referencing the deal, the 700 unit. What did it cost to get involved in that for you as an investor?
That one was, I think I had $10,000 out of my IRA in that.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. That's like, you know, yet it carried some weight, which to me was really interesting that, you know, that they looked at that. You weren't in a management position. You know, you were just a passive investor. I mean, I don't know if this would work in like a crowdfunding type thing. But I, you know, at the same time, I think, it's very interesting and it's neat how you were able to, you know, chalk that up to experience. And even though you were saying, you know, you questioned the experience, or maybe the experience wasn't as favorable as you thought it was, in terms of, you know, really being involved in the behind the scenes of the project.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a big project, and so there was a lot of people involved in it. I mean, we got the financials, which was great. We had our quarterly meetings, so that was all good. That we could learn a lot of information out of it. That was good. We were able to learn that and hear other people talking at the meetings and asking questions. And so we were involved in that. I think a smaller deal would have been better. There would be less people involved. There would be less moving parts. So being involved in a smaller syndication probably would have been a better thing. But we certainly learned plenty from it.
That's great. Well, since then, you've been involved in a lot of other projects and have a number of properties and doors to your credit. One thing I think you kind of shared here, too, is that you also had a partner when you started out and started buying properties. Is that correct?
Yeah. So my partner's currently up in Alaska, and we're not in a partnership anymore. We broke up about 2 years ago, but yes, we were.
But that also, you know, adds some weight. Maybe there's some expertise on the partner's side or connections or whatever it may be, maybe cash. And being able to partner with somebody is another way to sort of bridge that barrier to entry.
That's certainly a great way of doing it. That didn't happen to be our situation because she was equally as experienced as I was and equally as knowledgeable. So we were both fairly new at that, but as you and I were talking before, that certainly is a great way to go, is to find somebody with more experience or has something to offer to add, you know, that you can add some value to them. But if you guys can complement each other, if there's some need that they have and some need that you have, that you can balance each other out.
Now, do you find that the banks are looking very much at experience as a major factor in finance? There's got to be somebody on that team that has that kind of experience?
As you go larger and larger, yes, there's going to be more of a demand on experience. So we've kind of slowly moved up, so we haven't had that issue. As far as the experience, a lot of times the bigger issue with the banks is making sure you have the net worth and liquidity, and that's something. But not so much just what the banks need, It's what you need to actually accomplish the transaction is knowledge of all the different parts that are going to be going on through the process. And that's something you really, you know, don't know until you've done it. You can go through all the classes you want, and until you've actually done it and gone through it, it just doesn't really hit you as far as how much there's involved with a commercial deal.
That's really key. I'm glad you brought that up. That, yeah, it's not just appealing to the bankers. You want to succeed in your venture, and you want to be able to do it right. And that experience, I know you had pretty extensive training, and you had read, you know, a lot. You've been to a lot of seminars, and I mean, you had quite a body of knowledge going into it. But there's nothing to compare to the experience side of it. And I think your approach was real good too. I thought maybe you could just kind of recap that you mentioned here. Your first project together was that 20 unit, right? You know, maybe you could just say where you went from there. And that's another aspect too, is that people can start with maybe smaller multis. And then as they increase the number of units, they get the viable experience that will really translate again into the experience that they need to be successful later on.
Yeah. Even though we went with the 20 units and we did syndicate it, and it was a great education. We got a great education out of that, and had some fairly happy investors. I have a difficult time with the smaller units, in that when you're starting out, typically you have a limited amount of money. You want to use other people's money, but you don't have the credibility, and so you're stuck in a catch-22 dilemma, where you can't get the money because you don't have the experience, and you can't get the experience because you don't have the money. And again, that's where I feel, and I recommend to people to find somebody that's doing the process, that's experienced, and to tag along on their experience. If you go and get into a deal, or in fact, a real life example is my team that I have that I've been training. They are now in the deal. We have bought a student housing property, and their name's on the deal. They have that experience, even though I'm there every step of the way. This is giving them incredible credibility. And after they do a couple deals with me, if they wanted to go branch out and do something on their own or something, they've got the credibility. They can come back and say, here, This is what I've done. I've been involved with. This is my track record. Even though they didn't have the lead, they're on the management team, and that's phenomenal credibility for them.
Yeah, I think that approach is fantastic. That's something that is not always easy to find, though. But the fact that you've taken that step, you've got folks that are involved with you, and this is something I've encouraged people from the get-go, is that you need a mentor. And I think we all need a mentor, and it may be somebody who is, you know, that's paid. It may be somebody that you volunteer for, maybe somebody you meet at an REI meeting, and you say, hey, you know, can I come in on Saturdays and help you with odd jobs or whatever in exchange for, you know, teaching me a little bit about the business. But either way, that mentorship of somebody that's experienced, that's been doing this for a while, is really key in being successful.
I definitely agree that's a much faster track than trying to do it yourself. I know people that will go and they'll start out with the single families, then they'll get the small multis, and they'll start trying to work their way up, you know, the multis. And, you know, that, well, first of all, they're going to need to have the money. It's going to be hard to get other people's money on the small properties. And that seems to me that's a much slower way of doing it. The mentor is a much better way of fast tracking that education. And the other problem I have is starting out with the smaller multis, it's hard to get good management. I like at least 75 units and above, mainly so I can afford a full-time on-site manager as well as a full-time maintenance person. I don't want to be the manager. I don't want to manage this property and maintain the property. So I want something large enough where we can get professional help.
That, I think, is a really good point. You know, because I've experienced that firsthand too, and it's real, real tough when you've got, you know, like you're saying, 20, 25, 30, even 50 units, and you don't have somebody on site. And there's just too much that goes on, and there's too great a need when you have that many people living in one little community there. But yeah, it does, you know, cost wise, you can't really afford to put somebody in there unless you've got at least, like you said, that 70, 80, 100 plus units to be able to justify it.
That's correct.
You know, you touched on something else too that is a key point, and I'm sure those listening caught it, but I just want to kind of sort of reemphasize here is that, you know, the other aspect of it is you're buying properties now when you're in the large multis that are worth millions. And part of the requirement of that is to have a sponsor or somebody signing on that loan that has a net worth of, you know, that amount or greater, plus the liquidity. Maybe you could just elaborate a little on that. That's an important part of getting these deals in place as well. And what is the liquidity requirement? Do you know offhand?
Well, it varies. I've heard 6 months of the debt service or mortgage payment. I've heard a year of the mortgage payment. I've heard 10% of the loan amount. That's going to depend lender to lender.
Okay, gotcha. So not only do they have to have the net worth, but they've got to have the liquidity, or somebody does. Now, have you ever done it where you've had sort of a combination of investors or people on your team to meet those needs?
Well, there's been some that we've been able to do with just myself and my partner. Then I've also had where I've had to have somebody else sign on the note with me and to add their net worth and their liquidity. So I've done it different ways. But for our Houston deal, we had where both my partner and I, we qualified for it, and we were excited because that meant we didn't have to split with anybody.
Yeah. How does that usually work when you have a signer? How do you work that out?
Well, that's all negotiable. But I would love to give them 3% of the deal.
that was probably a little low.
Okay. It's typically more than that. Typically, I've seen, you know, like 10% of the deal.
Okay.
You know, so and they're taking a chunk of your management cut. So the goal typically is to be able to find a deal that's good enough that you can have a large enough management share that you're going to be able to give up that piece if you need to. And the goal is always, you know, to build up our liquidity and our net worth, so you don't need to give that cut to be able to do it on our own.
Right. That's
always something that you look towards. Except the problem is every time, typically you're buying more expensive deals, so the requirements keep going up as you gain your net worth. The requirements keep going up.
Right. That's true. You know, investors that have come out of the chute, you know, just buying 100 plus units. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that's a smart move for somebody if they have somebody on their team or a partner or that has that experience?
Well, if there's somebody on their team that has the experience, then I wouldn't have a problem. But to jump into a 100 plus unit without that experience is crazy. That's you know, you're gonna have a disaster ready to happen. If you're gonna try doing it on your own without some experience with you, then I definitely would say go smaller. I would also, you know, say try to do something closer to home. You and I are in Southern California, so that's typically a tough one to do as far as doing it close to home.
Seriously.
But, right. But yeah, I mean, I can't see, you know, getting into a multifamily without somebody on your team, even on a consultant basis. And I've done that where I was on a consultant basis for a friend of mine that wanted to buy. that to have somebody that you can call and ask questions every time something comes in, to have someone that looks over every piece of paperwork to advise you on it. Somewhere in there, you've got to have access to experience to pull off this.
That's great. Is there now the you work with? I don't know what to call the people that work with you. The you know, the some people call them mentees. You're the mentor, their mentee. Do you have like a formal course for them, or is this just kind of like roll up your sleeves and just start getting in there and learning as you do? How do you approach it? It seems like you have a kind of a unique approach there.
Well, it is rather unique because we really. This wasn't planned. I didn't plan on developing a mentoring program, but now that I'm free of my W-2 job, that certainly is something that might be in the works. But this was essentially where I was attacked by several people that tied me up and locked me up until I would mentor them.
you may get some more of those calls after this podcast. We'll see.
But I've been working with this group for probably about 9 months, and we've just closed on our first property together. But it's just it's new to me as far as the mentoring, but we're having a great time with it. I've got a great group that we're working with, and so we're looking for more properties. I may be, doing some more mentoring, but on a very small scale. It's something, that people need to find someone that they can work with and somebody that can answer the questions when they come up.
Now, just to zero in a little bit more on this, because it's really fascinating to me. It's great what you're doing. First off, I think it's great to be able to give back in that way, and obviously it probably helps you too, because doing the underwriting, of some of these preliminary deals, looking at them, learning how to research deals, researching markets, and doing a lot of the groundwork, which is fantastic, and it's great experience. But are they all local? Are they people in your neighborhood, or are they from all over the place?
Most of them are local. And we do meet, we actually meet in person sometimes, usually at least once a month. But we do have, several people that are across the country, Oklahoma, got one, I can never remember where he is. I think he might be Philadelphia, but, and we've got someone out in Florida as well, but, we use Zoom, a lot. For our communications, and we also use a program called Slack, which is instant messaging, where you can break people down into channels. So we don't have chatter going all over the place. We focus our chatter in on specific markets or specific deals, and that way we have several different groups. It makes mentoring at a distance so much easier, because I can just watch conversations as they're going, and I can jump into conversations as I feel fit. Or if they want me to answer some questions, they'll go ahead and put my name in, and it will let me know that I'm needed. And so it's a fabulous way of doing digital mentoring.
That's great. Well, we'll put some links in our show notes to those products. That sounds great. That sounds invaluable. You have these two REI groups that meet regularly. Do you find a lot of the people that are in your program that come to you through those groups?
Well, the original ones that I've met through those groups. Those were the original group of people that I've been working with and mentoring. I've met them through my clubs. Some of them, I think, might've been met through Bigger Pockets, but, most of them, I think, were from the clubs.
That's great. That's another you know, outlet for those that are listening is really more impetus to get involved with some of the local REIs in your area, that you may make that contact. It may, you know, be a one-on-one thing. It may be something similar to what Jeff is doing, but that is a good vehicle. If people don't know anybody, you know, they, to go to an REI meeting or a meetup that is focused on real estate investing and be able to connect with the potential mentors and partners, investors, et cetera. There.
Yeah, I think it's crucial. But one of the things that, I find is that people, you know, want to be spoon-fed something, and, you know, you're not helping yourself out. I like to see people that do everything that they can. They go and they read books. They go and listen to podcasts. They go to REI meetings. They get some background, some education, and from that, then going finding a mentor that you've already got. You know, you've already got up the first rung of the ladder on your own, and then now you're looking for assistance moving on up to the next step, but not going in, you know, totally not knowing anything, have absolutely no concept prior to, you know, trying to jump into commercial. I don't think you have to start out in single family. I think that there's plenty that you can do. You can jump right in to commercial, but I do think you need to study and, you know, read books, podcasts, go to meetings, and then look for a mentor.
And these are people that are working too. I mean, they're very active behind the scenes on a project, right? I mean, you've got people researching and doing, you know, crunching numbers for you and so forth, I would imagine.
I'm trying to expose them to everything involved with the multifamily, and I hope that we've bonded a strong enough relationship that we're going to continue working together. But basically, I'm giving them the skills that they could go off and do it on their own. I was at the Joe Fairless conference in Colorado a few months back, and I heard Chris Clothier, who a lot of people should know from his Memphis Invest programs. But one of the things he said struck me, and what he said that the job of the CEO is to be training their staff or training their people to replace them. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, that's, you know, exactly what I want to do. I mean, I don't want to lose them, but I want to train my people to be able to take a lot of the responsibilities off of me. And, you know, there's a lot of other things that I need to be doing, but if they could do all these other tasks, and know how to do all these operations, that's means I can move on to bigger and better things and either raising more money or whatever it is that I'm trying to do to build the company. But I want to train them in every aspect. And of course, you know, it's always you take the risk that if you teach them everything, you're going to lose them. But there was a quote, I don't know if I can remember it, but it was, the only thing more dangerous than training your staff and losing them is not training them and keeping them.
That's great. That's great. Very well said. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You really do want to have knowledgeable people. You know, they could, as your organization grows, who knows, they could become a critical part of what you're doing as you're expanding your real estate enterprise. So that's fantastic. Or they may be partners down the road with bigger projects. And I mean, there's just a lot of advantages there on both sides there. Wow, we zipped through time here just really quickly, and I think there's some super good information there, some solid meat that people can take back with them, especially in bridging that gap and moving into those larger multis. Any sort of last minute advice you want to provide for those that are listening that are looking to make that step?
You know, the main thing is like I said, over again, education is critical. I've always been a lifelong learner. I'm always learning things. I pick up things at different podcasts all the time. When I go to REI meetings, I never know what things I'm going to pick up. I was at one last night, and I picked up a little tidbit that I may be implementing down the road. But you never know, you know, where you're going to need something, or what little piece of information is going to make a major difference. The other thing is I believe in paying it forward. I know you do a lot of charitable stuff, and I know in my business, as far as, you know, we help a lot of people out, and you never know where things are going to come back to you. So I believe strongly in that. And that's how I run my real estate clubs as well, that we give to people, we give whatever we have available as far as education. And, you know, so far things have been coming back to me pretty well. So kind of my philosophy.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of giving back. I think that's an important part. As we're successful, to be able to pour back into others, that real estate is all about relationships. You know, that's the name of this game, and that's part of building those relationships is mentoring people that are starting out and need that kind of wisdom and advice as they're moving forward. So I that's great that you're doing what you're doing. How can people get a hold of you, Jeff? I'm sure there's going to be people that have questions would love to find out more from you. What's the best way for folks to reach you?
You can reach out to me. We've got our website, which is
I got a call right now. Didn't take any time at all.
synergeticig.com. Synergetic is synergeticig.com. You can get my email there, or my email is jeff@synergeticig.com. But either way, I'm also on Bigger Pockets quite a bit. So those are different ways to get me.
Oh, fantastic. Well, Jeff, it has been so great having you on. I usually only do this once with the guys that have been on before, but you got a really good howl, and I think you need to share it with our crowd. So so before we sign off, Jeff, I you got to give us your closing howl.
Okay, let's see what we can do here.
Wow, that was intense. That was a good one. Be a good one to compare people to. Okay. All right. Well, again, thanks, Jeff, for joining us. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Please note, as I mentioned earlier, everything we talked about here, including some of the links that we discussed, are all going to be accessible in our show notes, which is at the Old Dogs website, olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And just look for the episode with Jeff Greenberg. So that's it for today. Remember, cash flow is king, real estate investing the means. And until next time, keep moving forward, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.